Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers,
and from the law firm of Primer, Piper, Eggleston, and Kramer, providing comprehensive legal counsel to New Hampshire businesses and their owners for more than 30 years. For more information or to speak to an attorney, visit primer.com. And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own-farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. In the last few years, many hospitals in New Hampshire have merged or announced plans to merge or affiliate in some way. It's part of a larger national trend where hospitals around the country are teaming up. The hope is this will lower costs, improve care, and provide more streamlined services. But some worry about the potential drawbacks of large consolidated systems and question whether costs will automatically go down. Today, we look at the factors driving these mergers and what it means for our health care. And let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. We have three guests for the hour joining us by phone. Jody Hoffer-Gattell. She's a professor at Brandeis University's Heller School for Social Management, Policy and Management, and incoming chair for the New Hampshire Endowment for Health. And Jody Hoffer-Gattell, really nice to have you. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Also with us in studio, Steve Onan, president of the New Hampshire Hospital Association, which advocates for the state's acute care and specialty hospitals. And Steve Onan, welcome back. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Also with us, Lucy Hodder, professor at UNH Law and director of health law and policy at the school's Institute for Health Policy and Practice. And Lucy Hodder, big welcome back to you, too. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Laura.
Well, Lucy, what's driving this? What do you think?
So what's driving this is a lot of change in healthcare. And after the Affordable Care Act, there was a real push. New Hampshire adopted the triple aim. Let's look at cost, quality, and access. And there was a recession, and now we're realizing that Medicare and Medicaid are both really trying to get their arms around cost and quality. The commercial markets are doing the same. Hospitals are trying to react. So we're also starting to see costs go up again. And the competition around the lives that we have and the resources they need to bring are just, it's getting fiercer. So in New Hampshire, you have 26 hospitals, over $6 billion in revenue. It's really critical that these hospitals figure out how to survive in this environment. And so a lot of them are consolidating. We have a lot of out-of-state hospitals coming in. We have new teaching hospitals opening up. So it's really trying to capture the healthcare market in order to look at sustainability in the future. The question is, what's happening and why, and what is the impact going to be? Well, so there's just a huge movement. I call it the plate tectonics are shifting in New Hampshire and elsewhere.
And just, Lucy, real quick, if you could define for us the terms you think are the most important, because we hear the words consolidate, affiliate, merge, partnerships. What's important to think about with those terms?
What's really important to think about when you are a community and you're looking at what your charitable hospital, which is oftentimes your biggest employer, one of the biggest businesses in town, the biggest healthcare supplier, a charitable hospital is a unique relationship to its community. And the question is, who's controlling the business decisions, who's controlling the financial decisions, who's controlling the service delivery decisions. And that's what happens in these transactions. They're very complicated. Oftentimes a new board is set up, so you really have to dig into the details to figure out who controls the resulting entity. Even if your hospital remains, oftentimes there's a brand new board that oversees the system that is making the real decisions. So affiliation is the same oftentimes as merger. The devil's in the details, but the real question is, who's controlling the decisions that are impacting the community, impacting what we are accessing as partners in our healthcare delivery system, what are we accessing in terms of cost, quality, and accessibility for our healthcare, and who's making those decisions?
Steve Onen, why do you think we're seeing so many of these mergers, affiliations, partnerships, whatever you want to call them?
Well, we've been seeing this for a number of years, and certainly nationally, I think this trend has been has begun back in the late 90s and early 2000s, and it's really sort of taken off. And, you know, I came to New Hampshire about 10 years ago, and at the time, we really didn't have much in the way of systems in terms of multi-hospital systems. And many people often said, gee, is New Hampshire behind the curve? And I think what we've done in New Hampshire and what our hospitals are doing is taking a very deliberate, intentional approach to trying to understand what are the needs of our community? How do we make certain that that blue and white H, the hospital that we see that stands for hope and health and healing in our community, can continue to serve its patients today, tomorrow, and into the future? And so what are the changes, as Lucy's talked about, you know, the changing nature of the way healthcare is delivered, the way it's paid for, how it's reimbursed. All of those things have significant implications. And so as hospitals look today, what do we need to do to make certain that we can continue to be there for our communities in new ways that, you know, we haven't been there before? We're seeing a lot of focus on social determinants of health. And how do we keep people healthy? How do we keep people out of the hospital? How do we make certain that they're able to live a happy, healthy, productive life? And that has a big, that has big implications for, you know, the total cost of care as we seek to, again, make sure that patients can get the right care at the right place at the right time. That's what, in my view, and I think our members' view, that's what we're really trying to focus on. How do we continue to ensure that healthcare continues to be accessible, high quality, affordable, and to the extent we can make it, ensure that it's local?
Well, what's the tie-in? Lucy mentioned this, and I've seen a lot of this in the literature. What's the tie-in with Medicare and Medicaid reimbursements, Steve? How is that playing a role in these mergers and affiliations?
So it plays in a number of ways. Number one, Medicare's looking to try and figure out how do they drive the best bargain they can for the services that they're paying for.
So they're pressuring you guys to keep costs down.
And so we're seeing a shift in movement. We talk about this, you know, from volume to value. So we're moving away from a fee-for-service payment environment where you simply get paid for every time you do something to one based upon value. So we're trying to make certain that, you know, when you come into the hospital that, you know, we're providing the right care so that you get better, and we do that the most efficient, effective way possible. The other challenge, though, with Medicare and Medicaid, neither of those programs pay the cost of providing those services. On average, New Hampshire hospitals get paid about 85 cents on the dollar for Medicare and closer to 50 cents on the dollar for Medicaid. So those are real significant challenges as we've seen, you know, reimbursements decline from both the federal and state governments. That creates a real challenge for hospitals to make certain that they can continue to have the resources to provide for all of those high quality, you know, doctors and nurses and other caregivers to be able to provide that care. Those are big challenges. And so you've got this, the teeter-totter sort of pushing in both directions that creates significant challenges.
So under pressure to enhance the quality of care, to make sure people don't come back for repeat visits or repeat hospitalizations, on the other hand, not getting fully reimbursed for those services. So you're looking to save some cash.
And again, trying to find the ways that we can and continue to ensure that that blue and white H continues to provide that access to services when they're needed. You know, we don't know when the emergency is going to strike. We don't know when the disaster is going to happen. But we know that we need to be ready and prepared to do that. And, you know, those are significant investments in time and resources and all kinds of things. But again, the hospital of tomorrow is not going to be the hospital of yesterday or today. And so how do we make sure that we're building that system for the next generation of care?
Jody, on a national scale, what changes have you seen that you think are playing a role here?
Yeah, well, I'll just, I think it's really what Steve and Lucy are talking about played out on the national scale. And on one hand, we've got the push for mergers in healthcare just as in other industries. And on the other hand, a need to seriously transform the industry toward a more community-based model, addressing social determinants of health and really going upstream to keep people well rather than waiting for them to show up at the hospital. So that's been a major trend on the national scene, and I actually see those two things being a bit in contradiction. So on the merger side, large health systems seeking to compete with other large health systems for market share they need the smaller health systems as feeders for their specialists, and smaller health systems want to survive, of course, and they merge to gain critical resources from these larger systems. So that is not dissimilar to what is happening nationally and certainly in other industries as well. I think one of the downsides is that they're actually taking attention away from this major shift toward community health and wellness that Steve referenced. Here in New Hampshire, we have 7 New Hampshire regions engaged in the Medicaid waiver program called DSRIP that are seeking to integrate medical care with behavioral health care, with social services, to really invest in community health and wellness. And I worry that mergers take attention away from that need to shift capacity from acute care to community health and wellness, and could be, in some sense, a last-ditch effort to really support an outdated hospital-centric model rather than reducing hospital capacity and investing in community health and wellness. I don't think they have to be in contradiction necessarily. Mergers could help to move us toward this community health and wellness model, but I don't think typically they're designed to do that. So that's, I think, one of the tensions that we have to address.
Why would a merger, Jody, de-emphasize the importance of community health and wellness?
I think because they tend to be hospital-centric. They're driven by large health systems that have incentives to really preserve the existing model, and maybe each merger has to be looked at on its own merits. I mean, certainly they do. And typically they'll make the case that they're merging to deliver more community-based health. But I wonder if it's a compelling argument, because accountable care organizations are entities that really are set up to invest in community health and wellness because their business model is to take on risk and rewards for the health of a population. So if you really want to move in that direction, you'd be working to set up an ACO rather than focusing on mergers. And even among ACOs, what we're finding is the most successful ones for reducing costs are the physician-led ACOs, not the hospital-led ACOs. So there are other ways to get to that, and I'm not sure that mergers around large health systems are necessarily the best way to get us to this whole shifting plate tectonics and the triple aim emphasis that we should be moving toward.
Lucy, jump in.
Yeah, and that's the real question. You said it exactly, which is what is going to be the result? Because there's been study after study after study of the result of hospital mergers tend to very minimally reduce expenses if they're done really well, and they always impact at costs. So costs, unit costs go up. The cost of services go up. And that may be that system has the ability to really support the community as a result of that ability to garner more in terms of payment and cost. And that's the question. What will be the results of these mergers? We have major shifts in our hospital systems. Will it result in really good social determinants population health analysis, or will it not? And that's the real question. We want to trust our hospitals, and we want to be engaged in that conversation to make sure we're going in the right direction in New Hampshire. Because if we're not, costs will continue to go up as they are. Wages will be suppressed. We cannot afford to pay more in healthcare in New Hampshire right now. And so that's the real question of how are we going to partner into the future, because it's absolutely critical for our sustainability, for our small businesses, for our employers who are seeing more and more pressure from the fact that wages are going up more slowly than healthcare costs. And so what's going to happen to our future? We have not seen great penetration of value-based care in New Hampshire. Our accountable care organizations have not worked very well. We just have not
value-based
seen
value-based care, again, sorry to interrupt,
value-based
just remind care us what that is.
Where you don't pay for each service, you actually pay for achieving
earlier.
Cost and quality efficiencies. It's really hard. We have a small population. We just have not seen the success around that we need to. So that's another question. Are these mergers going to result really in a partnership with the communities and the people and the consumers who are paying for the care? That's what we hope. And so that's why we want a real conversation about the future of healthcare in New Hampshire.
Well, and Steve, everyone wants lower healthcare costs. What's the evidence that mergers do lower healthcare costs?
I think there has been some studies and reports that have shown a reduction in costs. And I think, you know, a lot of times people refer to, you know, studies and research that's been done 5, 10, 15 years ago. The health system today is not what it was 5, 10, 15 years
rapid changes
today. And so I guess I would just challenge, you know, Jody's comment that, you know, mergers may not really allow us to focus on community health and wellness. I actually think it's actually just the opposite. And it's really designed to ensure that, you know, we're providing the right care at the right place at the right time. And, you know, focusing on those social determinants will allow us to help lower that total cost of care. And I think that's really what is driving this. And, you know, the issue of around, you know, community, you know, having the community engage in these conversations, absolutely the community needs to be a strong part of this. You know, hospitals are run by community boards. They were established by their communities. They've been led by those community boards, and they will continue to be, and they should be. And the community needs to have a real strong, you know, partnership in these conversations. And I think that's what hospitals are attempting to do, and we hope to continue.
Real quick definition. Everyone keeps mentioning social determinants and hospitals' role. Just give us a little more there, Steve,
so,
please.
So, you know, what are the things that, you know, what are the things that we can focus on that, you know, impact our health? You know, they say so much of what impacts health is really not what happens inside the healthcare system. So it's housing, it's food, it's nutrition, it's employment, it's a whole host of things. But what are those things that we can begin to focus on so that, you know, we can help ensure people can get to their appointments, that they can live healthy, that they can eat healthy, that they can do all of those things? Those are important aspects of ensuring that the health of the community remains strong.
I want to bring another voice into our conversation. Joining us now on the line is Dr. David Cutler. He's a health economist at Harvard and committee chair of market oversight and transparency for the Massachusetts Health Policy Commission. And Dr. Cutler, welcome. Thank you for your time.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you.
Let us know here in New Hampshire what the Massachusetts Health Policy Commission does.
Yes, so we set this up in 2012. The legislature set it up, signed by the governor, and it's a commission that's designed to help the state reduce the cost of medical spending for all the citizens, not just for government payers or not just for individuals out of pocket, but for businesses, households, and governments. Among the things that we do that's quite relevant to the topic you're looking at discussing today is anytime a healthcare organization wants to make a material change, so whether it wants to consolidate with another organization or buy out physician practices or integrate in some way, then they need to present a case for doing so to the Health Policy Commission. The commission has statutorily 180 days to review the case, and we issue a report, a public report that indicates what are the possible advantages to the Commonwealth of allowing the consolidation, what would be the possible disadvantages, how we weigh those advantages and disadvantages, so what do we think would be the impact of any favorable changes on either access or quality or cost, what would be the impact of any unfavorable changes on access, quality, or cost.
So you assess these mergers basically, looking at whether they're going to be good for patients or not.
That is correct. And then if we determine that they would not be good on a cost ground, we refer them to the Attorney General, who, because they're often nonprofits, needs to approve, and for antitrust reasons, needs to approve them. In some cases, the Attorney General has decided to file suit against them, and the mergers did not happen. In other cases, the Attorney General has worked with the parties to put in place provisions that the Attorney General hopes will lead to the favorable effects and not the unfavorable effects.
Here in New Hampshire, Dr. Cutler, as you know, we've seen lots of interest in our hospitals from Massachusetts healthcare entities. What's the appeal? Why might a Massachusetts system choose to partner with a New Hampshire hospital?
Yeah, there are really a couple of reasons. There are some good reasons and some bad reasons. The good reasons would be that one can ensure quality of care, particularly in areas where it's been difficult to have it. So, for example, in Massachusetts, there are many rural areas, as there are in New Hampshire, and having healthcare providers be affiliated with larger teaching hospitals or just hospitals with higher volumes can often help to spread best practice. It can help to reduce costs of services that are bought. So it can do a number of things to help patients. One disadvantage is that some of what the hospitals in Massachusetts want when they affiliate with hospitals elsewhere is the referral of patients.
Sure.
Not so much routine patients because they tend to live farther away, but for example, patients who might need more tertiary care, more advanced procedures. In some cases, that's entirely appropriate. That is, in some cases, the best place for a person to receive medical care would be to come to Boston or to another place in Massachusetts. But in other places, it might not be appropriate. It might be the best place to take care of that person would be not necessarily the location closest to home, but maybe somewhere else a little bit further away, but not as far away as Massachusetts. So the disadvantage might be driving by places that are more appropriate to go to more expensive places that are farther away.
Are Massachusetts hospitals incentivized in some way to seek mergers specifically here in New Hampshire, or is it just this broader market trend that we're hearing about, Dr. Cutler?
It's some of both. The ability for hospitals to expand in Massachusetts has been limited because of the actions of the Health Policy Commission. So, for example, we've taken a generally skeptical view towards hospitals that have said, oh, well, let us get bigger because that'll automatically mean efficiencies and lower prices, because we haven't seen that. So for that reason, they're looking outside of the state. But it's also the case that nationally, the number of people who are needing inpatient care in hospitals is falling. It's been falling for several decades.
I see.
And so the number of hospitals that the country needs is declining. And all the hospitals are worried that with their fixed costs, with their big buildings, with their staff and so on, they won't be able to survive in an era of declining patients. And so there's a big emphasis in Massachusetts, as there is nationally, in terms of finding patients to make sure that, if you will, when the song ends, you've got a seat.
Sort of like the old game of duck, duck, goose, right? When when they shut the music off, you need to have a place to sit.
Exactly. And so the hospitals are very worried about that. And so for that reason, they're starting to look more regionally, nationally, and even internationally.
Well, Dr. Cutler, is there anything else that you think listeners here in New Hampshire should know about this, given that you work on the Massachusetts Health Policy Commission?
I would say a couple of things. One is, one of the things that we have found very, very helpful is to just shine some light into the rationales and the evidence for what's going on. So, for example, we've had a number of mergers where the parties come to us and say, we'd like to merge and so on. And we say, well, that's generally okay, but we noticed that at some of your institutions, you're taking very few Medicaid patients. You really can't do that. That's not an appropriate way to behave if you're going to be a big player. You know, if you're out in wherever you are, that's fine. But if you want to be a big player, you can't do that. And so that, shining a light on that, then the parties say, you know, you're right. We hadn't thought about it that way, but we really do need to change that. So I think shining light on it is helpful. And I also think that forcing the parties, so that's one. And then second is forcing the parties to really come to grips with what will it mean to actually save money. And sometimes that's tough internal discussions. Like, for example, you may have two hospitals that want to merge, each of which has its own orthopedics department. And you say, well, okay, I can understand there are economies of scale if you merge and so on, but why are you going to keep two orthopedics departments? Aren't you eliminating the economies of scale by duplicating everything?
But then somebody has to drive 45 minutes to get orthopedics, and they're not going to be happy.
So depending, sometimes
if you close
in
that
Massachusetts,
unit.
They're actually closer together.
I see. Mm-hmm.
And then you say, okay, and then they have these tough discussions and say, yeah, you know what, we're right. You're right. We can get much more in the way of savings if we do that. In a rural area, it's a little harder, but you still want to think there about, do we have two cancer treatment centers where maybe you have to go once, but you don't need to go every week? And would we be much better if we consolidated them into one for, say, specialized surgery?
Well, Dr. Cutler, thank you very much. Lots to think about as we continue our conversation today. We appreciate you being with us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
That's Dr. David Cutler, health economist at Harvard and committee chair of Market Oversight and Transparency for the Massachusetts Health Policy Commission. Now, coming up, we will talk more about hospital mergers here in the Granite State. We'll talk with one hospital that's planning a larger merger and another one that's choosing to stay independent. All that's coming up, so stay with us. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
Come fly with me, let's fly away.
Support NHPR today for a chance to win two $1,000 Southwest Airline gift cards. Good for flying out to visit friends in San Jose, California, or exploring rainforests near San Jose, Costa Rica. You'll be automatically entered into this incredible drawing to choose your own adventure when you support NHPR today at nhpr.org. Good luck.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, hospital mergers in New Hampshire. Many of the state's healthcare organizations have combined forces within the state and across the border with Massachusetts. We're looking at what's driving this and what the impact is on cost, on quality of care. As a patient or a healthcare worker, we'd love to hear from you. What are your comments and questions about hospital mergers, affiliations, partnerships that we're seeing here in the Granite State? You can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. With me for the hour, Jody Hoffer-Gattell, professor at Brandeis University's Heller School for Social Policy and Management. She's also incoming chair for the New Hampshire Endowment for Health. With me in studio, Steve Onan, president of the New Hampshire Hospital Association, and Lucy Hodder, professor at UNH Law and director of health law and policy at the school's Institute for Health Policy and Practice. A couple emails that have come in and calls to Gary writes, I would just like to hear someone address the elephant in the room. The healthcare system is a for-profit system, not a service. Jody, would you like to jump in on that?
Sure. I mean, I do think that mergers tend to be a corporate strategy more than a community strategy. And I don't know if it's so much a function of being for profit. It's just the motivations are not necessarily aligned with the needs of the community. I would also say another elephant in the room was really following from David Cutler's comment or his whole description of what the Mass Health Policy Commission does. And that elephant is that New Hampshire doesn't have the equivalent of the Massachusetts Health Policy Commission to ensure that when we do have a merger or the merger's under consideration, that we can do that kind of due diligence to negotiate on behalf of the community interests and the public good more generally. We seem to have a weak link there, and I'd love to hear Lucy's thought on that at some point. But I think we can't critique so much the incentives that hospitals have to protect their core business as there's a declining population in need of their beds, but we need a counteracting entity to be looking out for the public good, the well-being of the community. I really appreciated Steve's comment about community boards, but also note that under in a merger, they can be weakened and not have the same ability to really be advocating on behalf of the community that they serve.
So Jody's bringing in. Yeah, go ahead, Jody. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. So just really agree with the caller's concerns and think that New Hampshire could do better at having an entity that could really speak for the well-being of the population. And I think it's a direction we need to move.
Well, so on this issue of oversight, and Michael also writes in, he says, what role do high executive pay for some pharmaceuticals, insurance, and hospitals play in driving the cost question? So let's talk about the oversight issue a little bit. And Lucy, you first. We used to have something here in New Hampshire called the Certificate of Need Board, the CON Board. The state got rid of that a few years ago. What was the outcome?
They did. So in New Hampshire, we have very little oversight of our health care. We have our Medicaid program, and let's not forget that our hospitals are real partners in our Medicaid program. So when Dr. Cutler said you need to ask, you know, how are these affiliations impacting Medicaid and the partnership with Medicaid? It's a critical issue in New Hampshire. But we do not. We got rid of the Certificate of Need Board. That was a very political board, and it had sort of run its course. And in its place, we really don't have anything. We do have the Director of Charitable Trusts and our Antitrust Division at the AG's office, who has very minimal oversight in terms of looking at the charitable organization. So if you have nonprofit mergers, the Director of Charitable Trusts is our community shareholder. It is Tom Donovan now stands in the shoes of the community to try and look at these. But these are major businesses. I mean, some of the organizations that are coming into New Hampshire are their annual revenue is way bigger than our state government. So it's billions of dollars, and these complications around the type of merger that are happening are very detailed.
So is the AG's office not equipped enough to manage this, Lucy?
They may be. I mean, the question is, what kind of light do we want on our partnership with our hospitals, and how much do we need to control, or how much do we need to review to allow employers and consumers to engage in the cost conversation and the quality conversation with our healthcare delivery system? What is it going to take? And that's a really tough question. And in Massachusetts, they've decided it takes some government oversight. In New Hampshire, we haven't figured out what it's going to take. And we're going on trust and faith. And that's really scary when you're a consumer and you're paying 25% of the cost of your care, or you're an employer and you're seeing your costs go up. Employers are struggling. They're now trying to figure out, okay, what kind of insurance products can I access that actually look at managing the costs? And there's two ways to manage costs. The cost of what you're paying for has to go down, or you pay for less of it. And that's the way you can manage costs of healthcare. So we really need a conversation around what kind of transparency, what kind of partnership do we need with our healthcare organizations, how are we going to address the burning mental health needs of our communities, and what's the future look like in this partnership? Because I think Jody makes a good point. These are large, large businesses. They have to be sustainable. They employ a whole lot of us. They need to be good at what they do. But what's our relationship with them as a community and as payers?
Who should give oversight to these mergers? Steve Heim, what do you think?
Well, as we've noted, there certainly has been a shift in some of the regulatory apparatus in New Hampshire. The Certificate of Need Board has gone away.
And do you think that was a positive development?
I'm not quite certain whether it was positive or not, but it's certainly the outcome that we've seen. You know, a few years ago, hospitals came forward to try and create a more robust review process here in the state of New Hampshire relative to antitrust, which ultimately wasn't successful. But I think the point about, you know, what is the proper oversight, that's a legitimate question, and one we're certainly more than willing to engage in. And let's do it try and do that in a more comprehensive way, as opposed to sort of a, you know, transaction by transaction basis. The Attorney General's office, I think, does a very good job in terms of their reviews. We've worked very closely with them over the years on a number of areas, but it's certainly something that I think we're willing to look at. But I also want to remind folks, you know, we are not Massachusetts, so we are different, and you know, we're not Vermont, we're not Maine. So what do we need to do to create a system here in New Hampshire that ensures the integrity of our system? And I think hospitals have been very engaged in that and want to continue to be in that process.
With us now on the line is John Kakavas. He's General Counsel and Chief Legal Officer for Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center, which is proposing, working on a large merger here in the state. And John Kakavas, welcome to The Exchange. Good to have you.
Good morning, Laura. Good to be with you.
First of all, why does Dartmouth-Hitchcock Healthcare System want to merge with, do that major merger with Granite One Health? What's the benefit there for you?
Sure.
And for patients?
Well, what motivates us today is really what motivated us in 2009 and 2010 when we first attempted to integrate with Catholic Medical Center, and that is to establish an integrated, coordinated healthcare delivery system that will provide patients with greater access at a lower cost and in a more convenient setting. We aren't Massachusetts. I will tell you that Dartmouth-Hitchcock Health is not in search of patients like those large Massachusetts hospitals. In fact, we're having to deny upwards of 250 to 300 patients every month simply because we don't have the capacity to serve them in the Upper Valley. what we have in the southern part of the state where CMC's primary service area is we have a relatively large physician network through our community group practices in Concord and in Manchester and Nashua, but we don't have any hospital beds. CMC, on the other hand, has hospital beds and a lesser primary care and specialty care physician network. So it's a perfect alignment that we saw over a decade ago. I think that the issues that we saw have just become more acute in the intervening years. So we want to do what we wanted. We want to do today what we wanted to do 10 years ago. And we think we're going to better serve patients in the southern part of the state throughout New Hampshire by combining with the Granite One Health System.
Just remind us, if you could, John, what Dartmouth-Hitchcock Healthcare System encompasses, because it's already pretty big.
Yes, it is. So Dartmouth-Hitchcock, what's known as Dartmouth-Hitchcock, is comprised of Mary Hitchcock Memorial Hospital in Lebanon, New Hampshire, and Dartmouth-Hitchcock Clinic, which is a 1,500-member physician group practice throughout the state of New Hampshire and in Vermont.
So clinics in all around New Hampshire and Vermont.
Correct.
Concord, Keene, Manchester,
Concord,
Keene.
Nashua, Manchester.
Sure.
Bennington, Vermont, sure. It also comprises Alice Peck Day Memorial Hospital in Lebanon, New London Hospital in New London, Cheshire Medical Center in Keene, and Mount Escutney Hospital and Health Center in Windsor, Vermont, and the Visiting Nurse Association for Vermont and New Hampshire.
Wow, that's
pretty
big.
The Dartmouth-Hitchcock Health System.
So, John, who is in Granite One? Just remind us, please.
Granite One is comprised of Catholic Medical Center in Manchester, New Hampshire, in Wolfboro, Huggins Hospital, and Monadnock Community Hospital in Peterborough.
So that, you guys are already pretty big, a couple hospitals, a bunch of clinics, and then if this merger goes through, three more hospitals. It feels like you would control almost everything. I just wonder what you think. Is that too big?
Well, we wouldn't control everything, Laura, because...
No, not everything, but a lot.
Yeah, well, you know, the fact is that you've got major Boston academic medical centers moving into New Hampshire, drawing care out of New Hampshire to more expensive, less convenient locations in Boston. You've got HCA coming in. They already own Portsmouth and Parkland. I understand that they're in discussions with Frisbee Memorial Hospital in Rochester. You've got Solution Health right across the river from CMC. That is the combination of Elliott Hospital and Southern New Hampshire Regional Medical Center. So there's a lot of competition out there. What the combination between Dartmouth-Hitchcock Health and Granite One would allow us to do is Dartmouth-Hitchcock and CMC are the two biggest transfer centers in the state. So when a physician in an ED in a remote rural hospital has a patient who can't receive the appropriate level of care in that rural hospital, they call to transfer that patient to Dartmouth-Hitchcock or to CMC. Oftentimes, we don't have a bed. What we can do if we're combined together is provide that physician in that rural ED with access to every bed in our system so that that patient can get the appropriate level of care in the right setting at the most cost-effective place.
ED is, just remind us, John.
Emergency department.
Emergency department. Okay. One of the issues that I read has come up, and maybe you can correct me, John, with the merger with CMC, Catholic Medical Center specifically, is that it has different policies on, you know, controversial health practices like abortion. In keeping with its Catholic roots, CMC does not provide that. Dartmouth does. How will you guys make that work if this merger comes through?
That's a great question, Lauren. You're absolutely right. CMC is governed by canon law of the Catholic Church and the ethical and religious directives that are promulgated by the Conference of Catholic Bishops. We've been working at CMC for over 15 years in a number of different clinical collaborations, which includes obstetrics. Every year, Dartmouth-Hitchcock physicians deliver about 1,200 babies at Catholic Medical Center. We know Catholic Medical Center very well. They know our physicians very well. We observe and respect their Catholic healthcare mission. We've worked together to accommodate that mission at CMC for over a decade, and we are building into our agreement structural precautions to ensure that CMC complies with the dictates of the ethical and religious directives, to ensure that anything prohibited, any sort of care prohibited by those directives will not be provided at CMC.
Okay.
And conversely, CMC respects Dartmouth-Hitchcock's long tradition of providing
what it has always
a broad
done.
Range
yeah.
of services.
John Kakavas, I'll let you go, and I really appreciate being with us. This
Thank
is The
you very
Exchange
much.
On NHPR.
Okay.
What does NHPR mean to me?
That's a good question.
I feel when I'm listening to these stories that I'm there, that it's very personal.
It's quality programming that brings so much to my life.
It educates me in a way that no other station does.
I would encourage people to think about the value that NHPR brings into their daily lives.
And if you appreciate NHPR, you should be supporting it.
Support the station that educates and inspires you every day at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, how to redevelop old churches, which are more than just old buildings, to the people that love them. That's Thursday on The Exchange. This hour, we're getting the latest on hospital mergers here in New Hampshire. And you can join us at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And Lucy Hodder, Steve Onan, and Jody Hoffer-Gattell. We just heard from John Kakavas, again, General Counsel and Legal Officer for Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center, which is looking to partner with an entity called Granite One Health. And Jody, it sounds really, really big. Dartmouth-Hitchcock Healthcare System is already very big here in New Hampshire. A couple hospitals, a bunch of clinics. And then Granite One comprises three hospitals. How do we assess, you don't have to comment on specifics, Jody, but how do we assess how big is too big?
Yeah, well, there were actually three things that that I heard that I think deserve to be, you know, commented upon. One is that, you know, in effect, you're engaging in mergers because others are. And if you don't, you're going to lose access to patients. It's kind of a battle among the really large health systems. And this has happened in other industries, and it really does lead to a concentration of power. It's hard to argue with that. And it really is a survival mode. And that's, I think, why Lucy and others and Steve are arguing we really do urgently need a state entity that can play the same role that we see the Mass Health Policy Commission playing. And secondly, this idea that we don't have enough capacity to serve everyone here at Dartmouth-Hitchcock, so we have to merge. We don't actually create capacity by merging. We do create a way of providing certain services to smaller hospitals that don't have the level of care that we have. And then that's going to require that we coordinate the capacity between ourselves and the smaller ones. And one thing that's been established really in the research is that you don't ensure care coordination simply by merging. You ensure that you get bigger, but the care coordination requires separate investments to really carry out. And you can be highly coordinated with or without a merger. So it's really a different strategy. And mergers they're neither necessary nor sufficient to create care coordination. So I just think there's a lot going on here.
How should we look at this, Steve Onan? And what do you think? How big is too big?
Well, I think every...
Or is there such a thing as too big?
I think every hospital in the state, and frankly in the country, really has to look at what is the path forward for them. You know, we see hospitals, and you'll talk to one here shortly, that has not merged with other hospitals. They've certainly created a health system in Concord in terms of a number of other aspects outside of just inpatient care. But I think at some point we have to look at what is the path for each individual institution and how can they, again, ensure that care is local, it's accessible, it's high quality, and it's affordable. And we're going to see that in lots of different ways. And some we may see mergers, some we may see partnerships, affiliations, others we may see loose collaboration. And all of those things are really what's driving this, and how can we ensure that at the end of the day, it's getting that patient the right care at the right place at the right time. And so some of these systems, you know, as we see the ability for smaller hospitals, when they partner, when they affiliate with these larger academic medical centers or larger hospitals, they have an ability to bring some of those caregivers to those smaller hospitals so that services can be provided in that setting, in that lower cost setting, so that you can free up those larger centers to provide care to some of those more acutely ill patients. So again, it's really trying to make sure that we're providing the right services in the right place. And that may mean investing in some services in some places that haven't been able to do that, for a while. So I think, again, there's lots of ways that we're going to have to go about this, and every hospital and every community is going to get on that path, and it will look different for each individual institution.
Go ahead, Lucy. Well,
Laura, you know, the larger an organization is, and I think Jody put her finger on it, the easier it is to negotiate contracts that are reimburse the system at a better rate. And, you know, oftentimes the employers are the last to know that's happening. And oftentimes insurance companies pass those costs on to the employers and the individuals who are paying for it. And that's just seen throughout the analysis of the result of these types of consolidations in healthcare and elsewhere.
So,
and
Lucy,
so the question is,
I didn't really quite understand what you meant by that. So does that mean costs go up for
us?
Yes,
that means costs go up because now you have more lives, more services, and the insurance companies and the self-insured employers who are paying for the care need to pay you what you ask for because you are the main system and the only system in their community. And that's not always the way it happens, but that is a huge result across the country that comes from these mergers. And also building. There's a huge infrastructure build, and combined hospitals can access the ability to build more easily. And again, who is paying for that? This might be great, but where is the light being shined, and where is the help for employers as they're trying to figure out what the cost of their care is in the future and where their employees are going to access it? I mean, you could go on our health cost website, and one day you see a low-cost provider for MRI in this community, and the next day they're gone. You might see a low-cost provider of where you can get your infusion meds, and the next week they're gone. Who is looking in New Hampshire at what the future of our healthcare is going to be? Because these are critically important issues.
From a basic Econ 101 perspective, Lucy, it seems like costs would go down. You can share resources. You can get a better rate from insurers. You can maybe merge some of your administrative functions, which are huge. So it seems like hospitals would save money by doing this and that they would pass those on to consumers.
It's really hard to save money when you consolidate. In fact, we've looked at even hospitals that work really hard at managing the governance and the cost of sharing and the electronic health records and the care management functions and where the employment functions. There's about 1.5% savings in expenses and the best mergers and the most organized mergers and great leadership top to bottom. You see the costs of the actual care going up in almost every study that we've seen recently. And again, it may be for very good reason that you're saving the community's resource, that you're really pumping and in good services for the most critical patients. But as we heard, that is the important question to ask. What is your partnership with our high-risk patients? What is your commitment to the Medicaid program? What is your commitment to workforce development at this new merged hospital? Workforce is a huge issue in the state. What is your commitment to keeping patients in the right place at the right time with the right care? What is the cost of new buildings and new infrastructure development? What is the cost of duplication? What might our employers see in terms of better access and better quality and more transparency around quality? All these things our hospitals can do. We know that. We have wonderful hospitals in New Hampshire. The question is, it takes a tough talk and a tough conversation to get access, better quality, and lower cost. And that dialogue has got to happen between our employers, our state government, our communities, our consumers, with these large institutions. And it's really hard. They have the information. They have the data. We're hearing about some of the details for the first time on this show. What are we going to do going forward to make sure we're all working together? Because one of the most critical resources for our in New Hampshire is our hospital systems.
Well, sure, and not just in terms of the healthcare, but also everyone's mentioned the important role they play in our communities as employers and so forth.
Absolutely.
With lots of very good jobs, so it is important from many levels, as you mentioned, Lucy. Let's bring another voice into our conversation. This is Bob Stegmaier. He's president and CEO of Concord Hospital. And Bob Stegmaier, really great to have you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
So, as I understand, you're one of the few remaining independent hospitals in the Granite State. Why do you choose to remain that way?
Well, you know, ultimately, I think of health systems that choose to affiliate and merge because they believe it's in the best interest of the communities they serve, and they ensure they're able to continue to meet their mission. You know, if I look back over the past 20 years or so, we've considered a number of opportunities to affiliate with with other health systems, the central question has always been for us, how would this benefit our community and support our charitable mission? You know, a chief benefit for us in remaining independent lies in the opportunity for our organization to follow its own path, which creates, you know, which is created with its community in mind, the community we serve, and the ability to meet those community needs. So we, you know, we focus intensely on our ability to respond to the tenets of the quadruple aim, and I know you've touched on pieces of those this morning, which for us is continuing to improve the experience of care through the eyes of the patient, improving health of the populations we serve, reducing the per capita cost, and we add a fourth aim, which is the improvement in the experience of caregiving through the eyes of those who actually deliver care, the providers.
So what does it mean specifically to follow your own path? I understand what you're saying about the broader values, but can you give us some specifics, Bob, where you were able to follow your own path? You didn't have to do something that maybe your colleagues in other parts of the state who operate under larger systems than you.
Well, I think it comes back to, you know, some of the unique challenges that particular communities have. I know more broadly in the state of New Hampshire, we have significant behavioral health challenges. And for us, we consider ourselves at ground zero of the behavioral health disaster in the state. And so what we can do is we work every day to innovate to ensure that we're caring for that vulnerable population. We bring our providers together with administration and our trustees to understand a path forward to improve and innovate while our legislative leaders are working on that issue diligently now.
So you're talking about addiction and mental health issues. That's
sort of
twin crises there. So you're saying being independent allows you more flexibility to work on that issue, Bob?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, nothing is turnkey. We approach everything as the unique challenges that present the system and how we respond. And I think sometimes at a large corporate office in a distant land, you may not view it that way, and there may be certain corporate requirements. And we're able to stay right on top of the needs as they emerge and present for the communities we serve.
What do you think about the challenges a smaller hospital might face, Bob? Concord is lucky in that it's a major area. Lots of people live in the city. Lots of people live in the surrounding towns. You kind of have that natural population to draw from. But the smaller hospitals may not have those advantages. Would they view a merger differently than you, given the advantage of size that you have?
Yeah, quite possibly. I mean, I think for those organizations that feel the struggle, perhaps, of declining payment and the challenges of a rural geography and remote population, I think they would view it differently. I don't worry at all about an organization looking at the longer term picture for sustainability and saying, where might I align? In fact, where might our strategy align with other organization strategy in a geography where we can best coordinate care? So I do think the challenges are different for critical access hospitals in the state.
All right. Well, Bob, thank you very much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
That's Bob Steigmeier, president and CEO of Concord Hospital. And Lucy, Steve, and Jody, just a few minutes left. And Steve, Anand, I think to you first, what do you think is most important for listeners to think about as they leave this conversation, as we leave this conversation, in terms of whether mergers are going to benefit them or not? From that very personal, you know, I'm a patient, I want good care, and I don't want to pay, you know, $1 million for it.
That's a great question. And I think what you're seeing is what's playing out in New Hampshire is really trying to respond to many of those national trends, the local issues that we're confronted with, and how can we make certain that care is the right care, and how can that patient be committed and connected to their local provider so that when they need care, when their family needs care, that there's a place that they can go to receive that care, that they can be confident about, that it's high quality, that's cost effective, that it will be there for them and their families in the future.
Do mergers help with that mission?
I absolutely think they do, and I think it's an opportunity for the community to be engaged and certainly asking questions, and we welcome that. The community, as I said, created these institutions. They've sustained them, and they will over time, and they will be a part of those discussions going forward.
Jody, what do you think? What's most important to think about as listeners think about this topic and also see more headlines about more mergers and affiliations and so forth? What's important to keep in mind?
I think it's important to keep in mind that there is a shift toward less acute care and more community-based care, and we need to push and encourage our hospitals, our local hospitals, to be partners in support of community-based care, to address the epidemic in behavioral health issues in New Hampshire, and not be internally focused. And I would say, secondly, to really push for our state and our representatives to be looking out for the interests of our New Hampshire communities.
So not be internally focused. That's interesting. So what are you saying there, Jody? What does that really mean?
It means to go beyond keeping the beds full and, you know, channeling people to specialty care and be focused on proactively building community health and wellness, partnering with behavioral health, partnering with social services to address, as Steve very well defined, the social determinants of health. New Hampshire does struggle with the social determinants of health. And that's something that hospitals, they can't do it on their own, but they could certainly be a very useful partner in that work. And mergers, as I said at the beginning, run the risk of taking the eye off the ball and making it an internal kind of hospital-based conversation rather than a community-based conversation. And that's really the risk here and something that citizens can be looking out for.
Well, interesting. And it sounds like a preview of some of the things that you're going to be focusing on, Jody, when you become chair of the New Hampshire Endowment for Health. So we'll probably talk to you again in that role. What do you think, Lucy? What's most important for listeners to take away from this?
Stand up and be counted. Talk about what matters to them. Be engaged in this conversation. We have the sixth highest rate of what we spend per employee on health care
Wow.
in New Hampshire, and it's going up, so it matters. We, as employers, taxpayers, consumers, are responsible for almost a third of the health care dollar that's spent. So we should ask questions. We should talk about what is meaningful. We want, you know, at the same time, I sympathize with the hospitals. We expect them to be always accessible, to do everything we need, take care of our mental and physical health. And we also really are upset when we get the bill. So if we want all those things to work together, we have to be at the table making those tough choices as a community. Right now, we can't expect that those choices will be made in the way we want them to be made without us at the table.
And how do we get at the table?
That's a very good question. In New Hampshire, we're not at the table. So the question is, how do we get there and how do we do it together? We're good at this in New Hampshire. We can do this going forward.
All right, all of you. We could have talked for 3 more hours, I am quite sure. I really appreciate everyone being here. Jody, thank you so much for your time. We'll talk to you again.
Okay, thank you.
That's Jody Hoffer-Gattell, professor at Brandeis University and incoming chair for the New Hampshire Endowment for Health. Steve Onan, always a pleasure. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Laura.
Steve Onan, president of the New Hampshire Hospital Association. And Lucy, thank you for helping us out.
Thank you, Laura.
Lucy Hodder, professor at UNH Law and director of health law and policy at the school's Institute for Health Policy and Practice. Remember, our conversation always continues online, on Facebook, and at nhpr.org. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Jessica Hunt, Christina Phillips, and Ali Oshinsky. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.